This week on RSPB Update, Ancient Awakening continues RuneScape's new brand of questing, featuring hints about Vorkath, a compelling subplot, and a reason for everyone to enjoy this quest. We cover lore, rewards, and more on this installment of Quest. This is RSPB Update, episode 956, recorded Thursday, October 12th, 2023. Force Awakenings. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. It is Quest Week here again, featuring the quest Ancient Awakening, amongst other things this week. News that came out last Friday that was released after we recorded, and we'll talk about that all in good time after we have a chance to have a breath. But anyways, Tanis, welcome. How are you today? You feeling better?
Feeling better. A little under the weather last week, but definitely feeling better. And yeah, excited for Quest Week.
All right. Good. Zerdones is also here. Welcome.
Howdy.
Resident Clan Quester. Been around since the pandemic, doing all things quest-related with Update and Clan Quest. And, of course, Avernick is also here. You've heard him a few times before. Your claim to fame is that you got the Arkan game, didn't you?
Yeah, 2016, I guess.
Yeah.
I like that I'm going to, of course, on the show now.
Yeah, of course. And world first for archaeology mysteries and the like, too.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been having fun with your pandemic time there.
Oh, yeah, Orthon was a blur. How fast that was done.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned Orthon, because we kind of have to talk about some dragon-y things this week, not necessarily related to Orthon, but we were kind of saying, this environment kind of looks a bit familiar. But, of course, that's an interesting idea. Maybe that's where they'll put the necks, or the necromancy.
Spoiler alert.
Matriarch.
That's awesome. Okay.
But
I thought you're going somewhere else.
Where would I be going?
Things in the quest that we haven't talked about yet.
Okay. And we want to get there, of course. But this week I have to thank our members of the RSBNB Update Experience tier: Amos Reed, Andrew C, Drama Free, Jason S, Jesse W, Keski, Ricky A, Rippeth, Runestar, Seth W, and the Naked Captain. A big, huge thank you to all of these people. Without these guys, RSBNB Update would not move. It would not go. So big, big, huge thank you goes out to them. And you'll hear more about what Patreon offerings we have in just a little bit here on the podcast. But, of course, you can follow along in the full show notes at update.show. And you can find us in-game at Friends Chat, Bits, Bytes, and the community Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord. I'm Shane12088 in game. Zerdones can be found at Zerdones. That's with an X. Tanis is at Tanis79. And Avernick is just Avernick. He wins for having no numbers and no X's in his names. So, as we progress forward through this quest, typical warning goes out to everybody who hasn't joined us before for Quest Week. Spoilers ahead, as we are going to be discussing from start to finish Ancient Awakening. So, just to get this out of the way first, 50 Necromancy, the first quest that needs Necromancy, as well as the completion of the previous quest, Dead and Buried. How are we feeling going in here? Just some quick opening thoughts, if anybody has them.
Worst part of the quest.
Yeah, part of the quest. I don't really know what the Necromancy requirement was for. I mean, I guess Necromancy gets referenced. Yeah. That's probably what it was.
It's a little bit in the combat section, but it's definitely not like you're raising very much. It's not a lot.
Yeah.
50 is not.
We just see Zamarigal use it a little bit, and maybe it's just, you know, hey, the player needs that kind of knowledge.
Yeah, there's a line where the player is like, hey, I detect necromantic energy. I guess that would probably be it then. I guess that makes sense.
And I mean, 50, I feel like we were probably all 50 by the end of the first or second day, so not too far.
Yeah, 50 is very achievable.
So. Yes, eventually someone will lamp that. They won't even have to touch it. Someday.
Yeah. And I should also mention for folks listening on audio, we are doing video of this show. If you want to see our facial reactions to this, you can find that at youtube.com/rsbnb. And the reason I mentioned that is we just had some nodding along as that comment was made. So anyway, starting point of this quest, you wind up with the raptor, Aster, and an archaeologist. You find out that they have gone missing in the crypt north of Fort 4 and 3. You're sent down there to figure out what was happening, and you run into some light combat here. You have to recover 20 artifacts that are found either just laying on the ground or that you get when you kill the zombies. How did you feel, Tanis, going back into your favorite crypt where that little puzzle was?
Yes. Worst part of the quest. I mean, yeah, telling you.
At least you didn't have to do it again.
You can't hold it against this quest.
No, it was just there. And I actually tested this. If you try and interact with the puzzle, it says, say, you don't want to mess up your work, your fine work on this. So.
Fine work.
But, I mean, as for, it was light combat. I mean, I didn't have any.
No, of course not. Yeah. You look at them and you die, right?
They're level scaled. Yeah. I think they're level scaled because they didn't have like eight. I don't think they had a level. Maybe they had a combat level. They didn't really have like health numbers.
No.
So no. I think they were level scaled.
And that's kind of how you want to do it in this day and age, if we're being honest, I think.
Yeah, it felt like it's like a reskin of the same mechanic that was used in Denbury when we retrieved those puzzle pieces. So like they just kind of threw different names on different things and pick things up and kill some things.
Signed, sealed, and delivered artifacts go back to the guild and whatnot. But of course, what we uncover here first goes to the analysis of the artifacts that have been found, and we turn to Aster, of all people, to get a translation of what we're looking at here. And the translation we were given by Aster is Liagnu. And this is the point in the quest where I feel like there's a bit of friction or tension starting to build between you and Aster that you could either capitalize on or kind of just let slide or confront on this, because you, the character, know how to translate the Dragonkin.
Some choices.
Well, we've also heard the name before.
Right, this isn't new information, but my character definitely figured out faster than I did that this... Oh, that's on Gale Backward, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't new, but I think the stuff immediately following about Vorkath was kind of like the recap for people that didn't look up what Vorkath was from old school.
And where we were kind of going, you know, Fremenic Islands north. And whatnot, which I think is a fun development, because whenever RS3 does a take on something old school, like they did Zuck before, we have our own take on, of course, Fossil Island with Anachronia brought forward by the Needle and such. And what we ultimately learn with this is that Ungale is of course that island that the Fremenic are scared of, and that's where Zemregal has jetted off to. In the last quest, in search of this dragon that he's going to unleash on us, and I mean, I don't think we get any more fantasy based than that, do we? That you got a generic bad releasing the dragon of all time on you and your I want to say civilization, but in this case, let's just say encampment, the fort.
It's very Saturday morning cartoon.
We've got an evil lich who's going to resurrect a dragon to enact doom upon the world. Like we're speed running the World of Warcraft story.
Yeah, I think it's very specious of Jagex, because, you know, always painting dragons in this light of destruction.
We've got Mr. Mordo.
180 later.
Yeah. Mr. Mordo.
Mr. Mordo. Yeah. He's one of the good ones.
He runs a book club.
But seriously though, like that's something that I didn't find compelling in the story. I love dragons. Like, I love dragons. And we fought.
It just wasn't scary,
was it? And the Queen Black Dragon. and you know what I mean?
And you have all the stuff in ED2 as well.
And the Dragonkin and all this. So I don't know. I felt like it went back to the well again.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how this ultimately shakes out. Because, like, yeah, you're kind of right. Like, right now, the threat is Zemo and one undead dragon. Which, okay, like, there's peril there, I guess. You got an undead dragon. Zemo has attacked Varrok with a literal horde of zombies. Like, a literal army of the undead. That is way more threatening.
Well, yeah, have you seen Game of Thrones? I mean, and then if you throw in an undead dragon on top of it, I mean, I guess it's something, but you can take them right out with all you need is a dagger.
I want to posit that it's not so much about the making dragons scary. I don't think that's the point of this quest in this series. I think the point of this quest in series is to tell a story that is more grounded in traditional RuneScape outside of what they tried last year with the succession-based storyline, because that one kind of fizzled and died quick. So I think what they want to do is they want to say, if we were making this game fresh in 2023, which was the idea for Necromancy, if we were making combat fresh in 2022, 2023, how would we do it? And this is the same thing. How do we tell our first dragon story in 2023 with the tools and tech that we have?
There's a cutscene with Zemo, and for me, it really just sums up and encapsulates the quest quite nicely. Plus, that's another thing I did like about this quest. There was more voice, than there has been lately. But he talks about if they won't fight for me in life, they'll fight for me in death, and kind of thing. And to me, that was like the whole thing. So it's almost like, maybe that's a even bigger part of it than the dragon.
Necromancy.
I was kind of saying that tongue in cheek, but I think it's the necromancy element, hence the requirement and trying to pull it all together there.
Yeah, and I guess we'll learn what that is when Vorkoth arrives next month as a boss. And we'll see the story advance yet again through how that looks, and we'll come back to that angle on is it a quest in service of content or vice versa, because you can look at it both ways, and it does actually both things this time, which is actually really interesting. But at this point in the quest, we talk to Aster, and I feel like a lot of the problems that we saw that we talked about in the previous two quests, where we felt like these characters were very surface level and we're kind of just there in the background, I feel like we kind of got to dive a little bit deeper in this and kind of examine exactly what is going on in Aster's mind, given the fact that, well, as I think you said it best, Avernick, before this, her best friend, or their best friend, was just executed for treason.
That wasn't me, but okay. I'll totally take credit.
Those are Dones?
My initial impression, I think when we got the fort, was definitely like, oh, these are building managers, and there's not going to be much to that. And it wasn't until, I guess, Murder on the Border was a second update, but like, where it's like, oh, like they're doing stuff with like the kitchen manager we thought we were going to get, and stuff with Bianca and all that. And this kind of like brought it back. We're like, yeah, they're definitely, these people are employees and are definitely functional, but they're also trying to make them characters at the same time, which is probably a little bit ambitious, because now you have to like worry about like, oh, is their function like affected by like we're trying to get rid of them, kill them, whatever. But I think that doing something with Aster this quest throughout started popping up here and becoming more noticeable, and I think most players picked up on it like by like at least the next interaction, like, oh, this is definitely what they're doing with it. Like, it was pretty obvious. But I think I appreciate that it was done regardless, even though it was just like an expected step after the Bianca situation. And starting here, I think like it's a good, I think I said it before, it's like a good B story to like start in the beginning of the quest and like bring throughout. Yeah. Because the quest is kind of a stepping stone, you need like a through point that has a beginning, middle, end in this quest where we tell a story about like Esther dealing with this grief, and she's got all the traits like denial and trying to like make up for it and bargaining, stuff like that. Like, so I think this is the point where I was like, oh, this is the thing I didn't expect from the quest.
Yeah. And you know, you can actually kind of see that in the way your character interacts with Esther, starting at the beginning underneath in the crypt there, because you in effect have three paths that you can go. You can effectively, you know, be kind to Esther. You can kind of take a middle of the approach road, or you can just be outright confrontational. And each one of those, of course, are going to end in the same place, but it goes to show that there's something in particular that's just a little bit deeper going on with Aster's character. And, you know, I think they do need to resolve that, because it wasn't necessarily, I think, handled the best way in Murder on the Border, was it? Because we basically said, I think our summation of that quest was that, oh, it's just a murder mystery, and there's no real character development here. You're just solving the murder, and off we go, right?
It was a character exploration. It wasn't really a development.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm surprised how much that quest has like come back, like with like the Elemeria point, and now like the Esther point. Like, there's a lot of things that were in that quest that felt like that was it and done, and it keeps like rearing its head.
But it really is. It was the setup for this new cast of characters that mm-hmm. are sort of the through line of this quest series. Mm-hmm. It's here's all these wacky personalities.
What's up, Tannis?
The comparison I made earlier, it just keeps coming back up and back up, and I mean, it's the sequel trilogy. Here we are. Here's our new cast of characters. Mm-hmm. Really, aren't they beloved?
Does that make Elemeria
quest series?
No, Elemeria, the Raptor. Poor Raptor. He got the Luke treatment, is what, or she got. She, yeah, she.
Say they.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I've got to pull on this. If we're comparing the Fort Ferenthry story to the Star Wars sequel trilogy, does that mean Esther is Rey? So Esther is secretly Zemo's daughter? Are we putting
that,
money on
now
this?
That actually would make this a little bit more interesting.
Or is Zemo Kylo Ren?
Ooh. You guys are saying names. I don't know who they are, but that's fine.
Oh no!
Sorry. Yeah, because Shane only watches Star Trek. That's okay. Yeah.
That's the only star. Sorry.
They're gonna laugh at you, Tadis, if that comes to be true. And based on what we know about Mont Jack as lead designer,
I can imagine
and the direction
real
this thing goes. What if? I mean, it's better than people having to be told no 50 times that the shadow voices in your head aren't Sliske.
Well, I mean,
except when they are Sliske.
Yeah. Sure.
Anyways, back to Aster character development on this. Do we take this B plot as being one of the things that makes this quest? I wonder.
I mean, you kind of have to.
I do.
Because
this is a pleasantly surprise for me.
Okay.
Like, maybe I'm skipping ahead to the end a bit. My overall thought with this quest is there's really not much to it. Like, lore-wise, we've learned who Vorkath was. Okay. We've learned that some of the Dragonkin wanted to wipe out the humans. That's potentially interesting. But we haven't moved the needle wildly on the lore.
We don't know why Zimmerigal. Well, I mean, we can guess why Zimmerigal wants to do what he wants to do.
He kind of says he wants to like blow up Mislin.
Yeah, I mean, it's what he always wants.
And the fort's now his like pet peeve.
Yeah, I thought he wanted to take over.
The plot hasn't really moved. We're still in the Zemo is urgently attacking with Vorkath, which is where we were at the end of Dead and Buried. There's no puzzles in the quest. There's a little bit of combat. Like, basically the only thing to this quest, the only string to this quest's bow are a kind of fun combat encounter, one nice environment, and a little bit of character work. That's kind of all there is.
I want to ask you guys, how long did it take you guys then? Because it was definitely under an hour.
Yeah, I think I was about an hour.
Okay.
40 minutes to an hour, somewhere. I wasn't timing it, but...
Okay.
I think there's one extra thing to the quest, which was... probably it's going to be another conversation we have later, foreshadowing a lot. But it's like this was like hype up the boss quest, right?
Yeah.
Where, yeah. Like, that's not like a narrative plot thing, but, like, it's, like, show some cinematics, show the model, show yeah. those things where it's, like,
tease the boss.
That people that might not be so interested in the boss interested, which is, I think, I don't know if you guys had listened to that one interview that Mod Ryan did, like, last week or whatever, where he was talking about, like, Hermod and Razio are, like, some of the most interacted with bosses, like,
yeah.
past story mode, past the quest.
Yeah. Because that's like how they were like, designed. That's how necromancy was designed.
Right.
Right, where you interact with it a little bit in a quest, and
yeah.
obviously when the boss comes out, there's probably going to be some mini quests around it, and people are going to interact with it and be more interested. So I think this is kind of like in service of that, but then also yeah. the boss is in service of get people that are interested in bossing to do the quest. So like...
And that's a format, though, that we've seen ever since Extinction.
Yeah, ever since.
Right, ever since. Yeah. Yeah.
I think they realized that people liked that. Yeah.
And we know, I bring back that 25% number in that the core player base interested in these quests and who play them regularly is at that 20 to 25% mark. Everybody else interacts with them when they come across content or need to unlock something or want a reward.
Mm-hmm. And this will probably be required for the boss, so people
exactly.
will do this.
Exactly. And I
think they're going to make a... Do you think right. they're going to quest lock a boss?
I think no. the discussion's been there. I think they did it with necromancy.
And
yeah,
when you look at the requirements...
Necromancy quests were weird.
Right, but if you look at the requirements...
Whole conversation about that.
But if you look at the requirements of the Fort 4 and 3 arc, it's way, 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 way less than necromancy. And necromancy has showed them that you can have quest requirements that are stupid high.
I think that one of the big points from that interview that Rod Ryan did was like, if you make people do a boss for one reason or whatever, the people that weren't going to do it will try it again. They think that they have a chance. So yeah. I think that there's odds. There's high odds. I don't think it's 100%.
And I have to say, I always, and I mentioned this with the last one, I mentioned this with Dead and Buried, I mentioned this with the Necromancy Quest, I have a worry inside me that we would see a dumbing down of quests and not necessarily focus on the wider story ramifications. Like, I was worried with Necromancy that the way the Necromancy quests went is that would be a sign of the times for how quests would go in the future. And I think this is stepping back a little bit towards the traditional quest angle. And the reason I mention this is because it's just so important when you've laid down the groundwork of one of these quests, to be able to say that this quest is a series in a chain that leads to this, and you started here, and we're learning something story-wise along the way, and oh, by the way, you get access to this boss after you do the quest.
Well, structurally and mechanically, this is my kind of quest, right? Like, this is... If you're going to make me do a quest, then this is what I want to do. I want it to be story heavy, some combat. There wasn't any scaling. I could have done.
There was no puzzles.
But there was no puzzles. Yeah, no there was puzzles. No eye test. There was none of that stuff. And there was more voiced cutscenes. So, like I said, structurally, this is way more up my alley. Like I said, like the worst thing about this quest was its requirements of having to do Dead and Buried.
Yeah. I wonder, I'm trying to, and I'm looking on the wiki here. I don't see a list of the credits for this. I don't know who was actually on this quest.
I know at the bare minimum, Madzura was, if not leading it, high up on there. So, and their last project, I think, was Murder on the Border. So that's kind of like why the Aster line is there.
Yeah, got it. Okay.
That makes sense.
I think he had mentioned, they had mentioned someone else. Yeah. I don't totally know. Yeah. But that's the main one.
Yeah. And also in terms of accessibility, did you notice the new waypoint marks in the quest instances, how to get into the quest instances. Not only shown on the mini map, but now a gigantic quest icon floating on the game floor.
Was it on the mini map?
Yeah, I didn't notice it on the mini map.
No, it's just the usual people, like quest icon. Go here to.
I know people like were poking fun. I get it. But it was super helpful. I'm not going to lie. It was super helpful.
I think I saw a little of the poking fun, but like I also saw like this model for this icon is just so good. I don't even mind.
No.
You look at any other MMO,
that's how they tell you where to go for a quest. Yes.
It's our exclamation point.
Yeah.
I had a hell of a time finding those. With the first Murder on the Border, or with the first Fort 4 and 3, there was an instant spot. I had a hell of a time finding it.
Well, because it was just the generic portal. It was just a little yellow circle.
I think they've retro put this in all the past quests, the Fort 4 and 3 ones at least, because I saw rumblings of this in like JMod chatter about like this was supposed to be in for Dead and Buried, but it just didn't make the cut. Like it didn't get done in time. But now it's finally been done, and they've put it back for all those portals.
That would be nice because it is an improvement over the portal. I mean, personally, selfishly, I understand the technical reasons. I would like it better if it were just a waypoint marker and wasn't a enter a separate instance of the room.
Right.
Like I actually
that sounds
actually
almost more tech issue than
It is. Yeah, it's purely I have to imagine it's to simplify the scripting. So they don't have to put multi-NPCs everywhere.
How long had they been complaining about, like, Sir Tiffy had way too many options on him? Yeah. And then last year alone, they made the Falador staircase in the castle one of those, like, insane instances where there's five quests.
Yeah, there's three things, yeah. Because, I mean, like, think about it. If they actually had this quest in the world, like, they would have an Aster multi-NPC over by Champions Guild, they have the tombstone as a phased scenery icon. Bill and his crossbow, Elamaria upstairs in the inn. Like, it would be a scripting nightmare.
It consolidates everything to like quest specific parts.
So I get it from a technical standpoint. I do think it's a shame. Mm-hmm. You do lose something.
I mean, anytime you can separate me from the rabble out there, I'm totally happy with that. Preferred, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
what if there was like a level 3000 plus world that you had to reach certain milestones on something in game and buy premier?
I just think there should be we just need a toxicity meter, like a radio, like what's that, like a Geiger counter, you know, like just monitoring toxicity of the world at any given time.
Someone said the word Jamflex too many times.
You mentioned the Jolly Borean, and I just want to come back to that for a quick second here, in terms of obviously Bill and his friend Crossbow, which, you know, you can question if he drank too much, but
his
also
daddy issues Crossbow.
But also, also we learn how the Raptor's voice works, and that the helmet in effect modulates the Elamaria's voice, so it sounds different, and she can play the Raptor by wearing the set of armor.
Oh, yeah, the Elamaria conversation was definitely like what are the top three things community said
because people were so curious about that and that reveal and why we didn't know going back to Dead and Buried. Not only, you know, us, but just the in-universe reasons too. So,
and the Raptor has been voiced before.
Yep.
Like the Raptor is voiced in Song from the Depths. Mm-hmm. and in the Troll Warzone trailer, I think. Maybe not. I know Ozan.
I think in the actual tutorial it was at some point, maybe.
Maybe, I don't know.
In 2011.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, but it's just tying those loose ends together, you know? Picking up on the feedback from the community in the past two or three quests and bringing everything forward, I guess. So
yeah that conversation was like directly at the player, like, oi, this wasn't a bad idea. We're explaining all this. Sit down, you little nut.
Yeah, it was...
This was definitely like the quest was like, yeah, slowing down. And I don't think anything, like, I think the Bill stuff was a little like introducing some new angles to him, I guess, like with his issues with his father about like him not wanting to be a fighter and everything. Because I think that was purely because Bill's become like a fan favorite, like everyone's petitioning for him to get his beer garden. And they feel bad for him.
He's such a sad sack.
Yeah, we like Bill, but as for what's her name,
Ellamaria.
Ellamaria.
And that one was to answer all the community questions.
Like, where else have I seen a beloved character that was just made to do something that was, or just so out of what everyone thought, like just the exact opposite of what they stand for, what they were. Where have I heard that before?
What? Where? Where
have I seen that before? Oh, yeah, the last Ryan Johnson. Never mind.
Back to the sequel trilogy.
The last, but it is, right? Because, like, the Raptor was this awesome character, and now I can't. The Raptor is not,
it's
like.
It's done for you?
Yeah, I mean, really? Like, it's just, no.
Killed the mystique.
It did, and a queen at that, like, no, you just Luke Skywalker'd all over my story, my Raptor here.
It's, oh, no.
I don't like it. Oh, I don't like it at all.
I want to talk about the cutscene and the environment work on Ungale, because that's important. But before we do that, I want to thank our Patreon supporters for this week. I'd like to thank Alvaro L., Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvidzel, Chubura, Chunk the Monk, Dominic R., Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Ling01, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G, Pernasius, Renhawk, Ricky A, Rippeth, Runestar, Samuel, LFL, Scott DS, Seth W, Shirtpants, Tabby, The Naked Captain, The Dabbin' Goat, Tim, Tom V, Ukulele Steve, and Zant. Big, big, huge thank you goes out to all of these people for allowing us to do what we do here at RSBNB Update. It truly does mean the world to us. And of course, what we're talking about is our Patreon offerings at patreon.com/RSVNB, plus everything else that we bring forward to the podcast each and every week. Just head on over there and you sign up for as little as $1 a month and you gain access to an entire back catalog of monthly bits or bonus shows, as we call them, talking about a whole variety of topics. Last month, we talked about Sirion and I talked about the need for skill guilds and where they land, and the fact that, you know, maybe there's something to pull on with threads for skill guilds that's needed in RS3. And Tanis, it's too bad you were sick for this one. You know why?
Why?
And this is the preview that we give to the listeners about why you want to go and pick up this monthly bit right now. We found out why I dislike Slayer.
Really?
Yeah.
That'll be a reveal.
Yeah. So if you want to hear about that, because, you know, you go back in time, you see, I've been one of the people who have always just really, really, really not liked Slayer. It's at the very, very bottom of my skill list, like the absolute bottom. And we've been trying to figure out why that is. And it's a two-part problem, and we nailed it down on the last monthly bit. But we have other episodes as well, including our world famous tier list, not to mention those discussions on holiday events, discussions on how we, for example, can look at how legacy combat works. That was also another fun one, going back in time. Legacy combat, where that stands. I think that one still stands on its own, given necromancy and the like. But bringing all that together, you get access to the entire back catalog of 60-plus bonus episodes of RSVB Update for $1 a month. If you want to give a little bit more, you get a VIP rank on Discord, chat channel access, and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month, plus high-quality stereo versions of the show. If you want to give $5 a month, you get a shout-out on the podcast each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And, of course, lots of fun things in there, especially on this one, what we were just going back and forth on in pre-show this week. So all of this and more can be found at patreon.com/rsbnb. And, of course, a big, huge thank you goes out to the two people who took our call to action last week and filled up the experience tier, Amos Reed and Runestar. Big, big, huge thank you to you guys. I've reached out on Patreon website. Patreon website issues aside, there's a bit of a redesign this week that's made things have a few wrinkles in the program. But nonetheless, big, huge thank you to everybody. And we are in the process of finalizing the Q4 mail out to experienced tier members. So that's actually looking really good. I just saw another preview of that before we began here. But all right. Ungale, the environment and cutscenes. Wow. Again, wow on the cutscenes. That's literally all we have to say on this, because these cutscenes look almost as if they were pre-rendered in, you know, full motion, but what they are is they're just painting stacked upon painting with some minor animation on them, aren't they?
That tech advancement they did for Necromancy is definitely paying off, and it will forever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the recipe and all, but I know there was more voices, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's a return to that kind of painted slideshow cutscene, but I think it was done appropriately here. Mm-hmm. Like it was an introduction to Ungale is basically and then there was one at the end, but they were transitionary scenes.
I think the best use of these slideshow cutscenes has been when the player is not there, and especially for this one, you have Zemo monologuing to himself while we're sailing over there. It's like very it's a very good place to do that kind of cutscene, and then same at the end where we're like, he's flying away and yelling out his plan while we probably can't hear him. Definitely good places to use them, and they look so good. Definitely a good direction for these to go in, a good improvement.
I feel like I might as well mention it here that Zemo seems to have a new voice actor from the last time we heard him.
I think I thought that too.
Okay.
And you think it's actually the same?
It's the same as in Succession, where he had two lines.
Okay, yeah.
But before it's different.
Yeah, he was previously voiced in Missing Presumed Death.
Different from that, yes.
Long time ago there.
Long time ago now. And I one thing that I wish RuneScape did was credit their voice actors a little better.
Yeah.
Because I don't know who did the voices either time. I've heard speculation that his 2011 voice was a J-Mod who has since moved on, which seems very plausible.
And you know what the interesting part is? They can actually get away with that in the UK. But if this was an American-made game, the voice actors would have to be registered,
right?
Oh, wow. With the union or whatever that governs voice acting work. So, they actually insert J mods or random player cameos like they did in ED4 or the J mods
archaeology
puppy or something like that, right? So. Yeah. And the environment.
Would they have to give the dog a SAG card?
I hope so.
I don't think. I hope so too, but I don't think so.
The thing is, it wasn't actually a dog; it was a human doing a bark.
they just got Frank Welker in. Yeah, I could say that.
And the environment on Ungale as well, in addition to the cutscene. You know what I honestly felt like with this? I felt like I was running up to the boat for the start of one of my raids on ESO, Elder Scrolls Online, with how this environment was. It felt like this could have been the legit starting point to RuneScape Raid.
Something or, like that lead up, kind of that, like that run up, done. Yeah.
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 So, I mean, such a good environment here. And let's
yeah,
also,
really nice environment.
Let's just talk about that this is Frozen Orthon, we said, right? Basically, how it looks.
Yeah, a lot of the...
Yeah, it's reusing. Tech. Yeah.
Yeah, which is done very well here. Yeah. Like
it
I'd
makes
compare
sense.
This to, what was yeah, it? It's... Ubisoft and Mighty Fall is technically Frenisque from Fate of the Gods, but colored green. Mm. It's on that level of, oh, I didn't even realize until I thought about it.
Right. Yeah, same.
Well, and it makes sense because it's all dragon construction.
Yeah, it's all dragon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like it makes sense. Sure. The teleportation device is just
the
Orphan
teleportation
device. That makes sense. It's a teleporter. What do you want?
Yeah. And we look at this and we say that, as we were talking about before, this is in effect kind of building up the hype for what's inevitably going to come next in the in the Vorkath boss fight next month, and you know, showing us some of the environment, showing us, you know, Vorkath just sitting there and Zebra Eagle in effect reanimating the dragon before,
which was a really nice animation,
great model.
Yeah, let me see.
I really
if
like
I can
that
pull
animation.
That up. And I'm wondering, and I don't know if it's time for this right now to talk about this or if we come back to this later, but what we're seeing is in effect a modern quest that isn't, it's not Underground Pass, and it's definitely also not as an Azure's quest, right? It's a different kind of quest. It's got that polish on it that talks about, you know, this is something that somebody who started RS earlier this year can just ease into. You don't need to have a huge backlog of lore experience with it. Same thing on the combat front. And if you're coming from another game as well, it's going to provide what you're kind of expecting in terms of environment and immersion with it as well.
It will, if you can get through the requirements to get to it.
Again, like you're saying, then dead and buried
again,
the worst part.
The yeah, I part. Mean, this quest was cool, right? Like this, I mean, it didn't, we still need to touch on the cliffhanger and
yeah, we'll
Cyril's
get there.
Right?
Yeah, we'll get
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And just the fact that you click that door, you walk into that room, the camera is a little bit off to your right. It goes up and then down through the ice, and you see Zemer Eagle down there. Then next, you're back up top, and you're, of course, in the wave-by-wave combat encounter. Bad, yeah. So overall, yeah. Again, a really well-done cutscene on that board, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, there were slideshow mm-hmm. cutscenes, but there were also actual
traditional
ones. Like, it was a
good
mix.
Yeah.
Yep, in engine.
And then at the end of this, it goes yeah from a 3D one to a 2D one once he starts breaking out of the aisle and flying away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely good use there.
Yeah.
So you'll never stop me, Batman.
What of this combat encounter, this waves of undead, what did you guys make of that being in here? Because it felt like, you know, there were some things that could be mechanically involved if you wanted them to be on the higher difficulty versions
at
of them,
level,
but it was basically a cakewalk in the quest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I thought it was neat, but I didn't really get it. Like, I was talking with Sirion about this a little bit, and one of his complaints, which I agree with, was the encounter basically starts with a text dump saying, these are your three friends. They have these three special abilities. Activate their special ability by doing this.
You just and right-click then, target on something, and then they'll all use them.
Yeah,
right, all
but
you can do is point
they did
them.
Anyway?
Right, you never activate their abilities. You can just tell them, like, that enemy's bothering me. Work on that
right.
one.
So, like, kind of two problems with this. One problem is the onboarding is really clunky. Mm-hmm. And it would have been nice if it had been established in gameplay a little bit better.
Maybe earlier.
But also,
maybe the beach ambush, yeah.
Yeah, like, bring it up somehow organically. But also, like, I was kind of unclear on how to use them, but I also never really felt like I needed to.
Yeah.
No. I didn't use them at all. I never used. I mean,
I revoed I basically AFK'd Soul Split that whole encounter.
And I had to ask somebody after the fact, was there a way to specifically choose the Raptor and say, Raptor, use your ability? Or is it just right-click targeting and then they all will just use them?
I think the ability was passive. And definitely during the quest, it barely mattered what you picked, I feel, for especially the buffs and stuff.
I thought the buffs was a nice callback to Shattered Worlds, one of my favorite pieces of content, and I mean that literally.
But this whole setup, okay, so number one, this is like the, I kind of like this style of combat, like with the waves and stuff like that. That's something that I kind of, you know, that's something that I like. And I like Shattered Worlds, and I liked Morvan's challenge, and you know, that kind of stuff.
Fight caves, Gilm.
But it felt to me like this is something, and we all know that it sticks around, but I think there is more to come with this. I think there's a reason it has buffs like that. It's set up that way.
They're very bespoke, for sure.
I think this is going to be more a reoccurring thing that is much more rewarding or important, or will have a reason that we don't know right
could
now.
Could Vorkath be somehow another elite dungeon, and this being this kind of thing a mechanic in there?
I was going to say, just besides the elite dungeon thing, do you even think that they would dare put some system like this in a boss? Do you think people would not be happy with that?
I wouldn't want to interact with this in my PvP.
There is some precedent for that. Like, Solak comes to mind.
I was thinking Arc Glacor, where you get to pick, like, what's going on.
Yeah, the Arc Glacor, that's more of a... Like what I'm talking about, like having helper NPCs.
Sure,
in a fight.
An ability over there.
Yeah, in Solak, you kind of have that with Marethiel. And are there any others?
I think it's the only one.
Yeah, there are others where there are NPCs around, but they're mostly just sort of shouting encouragement at you. like Raksha, you just have the Archivist over there saying, yeah, go team. Yay.
Yeah, all of the Elder God Wars Dungeon ones, like you have someone yelling on the sidelines. You're doing it.
Yeah, good job.
Okay.
You dodged that ice beam.
And there's also the standard and hard mode difficulty post-quest. Easy.
Oh, I was going to say hard mode, I ran out of food. I got it first try, but it definitely depleted.
I ran out of food too, but that's because I went into both of the post-quest drastically undergeared. Like, I went in with no potions, like 10 blubbers. That was it. I got about halfway. I did normal mode and then halfway through hard mode, and then I died. So I came back with brews and overloads, and I had no issues.
Yeah, I went in with like 25 sharks, and I was like, and level 90 power necro gear. So that was like about right, I feel.
I mean, I went in equipped to the tits, but I mean, whatever, you know, that's just how I gotta compensate for something.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, always
if it went poorly, I was gonna switch to Aang, so.
I do hope you're right, Tanis, that there is more to come with this, because I think, like, I think it was a neat idea. My biggest complaint with it is that there's really no reason to do it.
Yeah.
After the quest, like, there's a reward for doing normal mode once. There's a reward for doing hard mode once.
Cosmetic overrides.
Yeah, cosmetics and title and hero pass. Yeah. And then there's not a reason to go back. You're just done. The XP is not really good enough to be worth doing.
And I was hoping this would be an XP training method that could kind of step between.
Yeah.
You know, be at the beginning point where if you just wanted to go somewhere instance to train, and then after you might go to, you know, like a Shattered Worlds or something, right?
Yeah.
Well, and that's what I see it having, like a Shattered Worlds type of shop, introducing, you know,
but like you need currency. More than 12 waves. You need like an infinite number of waves climbing with that.
Yeah, like an infinite mode or...
Well, yeah.
Basically Dominion Tower that's not garbage.
It could just give you more Shattered Anima and be like a alt version of Shattered Worlds.
Shattered Worlds 2.0?
Well, I don't know if there'd be an in-game reason for that, though, but...
No, maybe not an in-game reason, yeah, no, but...
Well, the in-game reason could be, like, we have the necromancy, we have this skill, but the way that you unlock most of it isn't actually through combat. So what if that was how you could kind of customize some of your abilities, yeah, or even just cosmetically? I don't know. Yeah,
pure speculation.
Right, and this gets
but
back
it's
to the...
good to leave, right?
And for people who aren't existing listeners of the show, the reason we're talking about this is because you don't just put something in there like this with these buffs, I think, to be just used once, I don't think.
It sure seems like it'd be a lot of work. I mean, it's too good, it seems like, to me, to just be this one-off in a quest.
Isn't that one of the hallmark of RuneScape quests, though, is that they make like a really cool system for the quest and then never touch it again?
Never use it again.
But it's not repeated.
I mean, yes, but that seems like something they're trying to avoid doing because it's really inefficient.
I agree.
It's really ineffective use of resources.
I think we're all circling around. We liked it, but we wanted it to be used
more
and to a degree where it was more on our levels of game. Because this is 50 necromancy, right? Like, is the expectation?
Yeah, I think
But also
that would have been
also
a challenge with 50, I think.
Yeah, it would have. But also, what reason do you have to come back here after doing each one more than once?
Right, we're thinking more reason, challenge,
exactly.
More.
Yeah.
The base idea is good.
A reason to come back to Ungale in general. Because it's a really nice environment that has nothing going on.
Put some archaeology there. I'm right there.
We already have Dragonkin. We already have Dragonkin. Yeah. Archaeology.
Unfortunately.
We have two Zaros sites. We can have two Dragonkin sites. Why not?
Yeah, sure, I guess. Why not? Why not?
Why not?
So after the wave-by-wave fight, we're in a situation where we find this runic projector thing. Basically, at that point, we just search the room for some energy pieces, and then that activates the machine. And what this basically is it's a Dragonkin archive that, just without question, will send you back to where you came from.
They're super friendly people.
Yeah, which was really surprising, handy, wasn't it?
I guess it's AI, I don't know. It's in the form of Zorgoth, right, which we saw briefly in Desperate Measures during one of the flashbacks. And Zorgoth is the villain of Dragon Slayer 2 and old school RuneScape. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like tying like those loose little threads through there. But
you don't get Dragon Slayer 2, but you can have a bit of know that the lore still exists in this game kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. Same as like with Zuck and Fossil Island.
How did you guys feel about, I've seen this complaint a lot, like, oh, teleportation exists. Why is this a problem that we don't have a boat anymore?
Yeah. I mean,
your teleports don't exist for your friends.
That's definitely one explanation.
I think, how does it go? If you're wondering how he eats and breathes and other science facts, just remind yourself that it's just a show. You should really just relax.
And there's also more information you could glean about Vorkoth in this too, as well, if you wanted to. So,
rather than just teleporting back right away,
you can. Yeah.
Yeah, Vorkoth's just a big puppy dog. So, okay, right. Tinfoil time.
I'm here with you.
So we've all been assuming that Vorkoth is going to be the next big boss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One thing that I picked up on two things in this conversation with Archivist Dude. One thing is that the purpose of Ungale was to find the ultimate weapon that would wipe out the humans.
Sure.
And then Vorkoth. He said Vorkoth was a failure.
Yeah.
I think it's something else.
So what is the ultimate weapon of Ultimate Destiny?
I feel like if you look at Dragon Slayer 2, it's Gorvek, which was the boss of that quest. But okay. I don't think that's been talked about here at all. So I don't know. I don't think it's on the table.
Well, Yeah, I mean, it's not a word that we've heard in RS3.
Right.
I don't know. I'm wondering if maybe Vorkath isn't actually going to be
the next threat. Boss.
The boss.
Yeah. Might be a quest boss, but will it be the next actual boss? I don't know. Will Zemo land in front of Varrok and Vorkath will just go play fetch and ignore us?
I thought that was more the direction you were going to go in, because my thought when I saw the docile thing, I was like, oh yeah, Zemo's doing normal necromancy. Of course, it's like a bad dragon, but we're going to do consensual necromancy and it'll be our friend.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Would Vorkath, that was deemed to be too docile after being infused by Zemrigal's necromancy, will that fix that problem and make it so vicious that we need to, you know, kill it when it becomes the next boss? Maybe that's the angle it's taken.
It could be. That's kind of the way I'm expecting. Mm-hmm. I just think it would be an out of left field. That's why I preface this with tinfoil, very tinfoil hat theory that plot twist. It's not actually Vorkath. It's something else. I don't expect that, but be funny.
This has definitely been a very straightforward quest series. Like, this quest was everything we were told it was going to be, plus some, like, the character stuff slower at the beginning. Yeah. But, like, it was on Gale, it was Vorkath, it was. So, like,
yeah, it's very conventional.
I feel like they have to kind of do that. I feel like they have to do that.
Right.
Well, yeah, because the Elder God storyline, the Sliskay's Game storyline, they were very twisty.
Twisty.
Yeah,
at least
needed
these nine out of these
entire,
10 factions.
The entire map, mind map to figure that one out.
Yeah.
They've used all their twisties up in the last quest.
Maybe. And after...
Oh, you say that.
After after the Waves of the Undead...
It can't get any worse.
We get to another discussion with Aster...
Don't say that.
...Avernick, that you wanted to bring some points up here.
Yeah, I think we've talked about a little bit through, but like this goes kind of like the through line for the quest, which we've been talking around, is like the quest is mostly like a stepping stone for Dead and Buried to the boss and for the storyline in general. But like the Aster bit was like, I think that most people saw like what was happening with the denial and all that, but her just coming to terms with, yeah, she feels really bad about Bianca and all that. And she's trying to make up for it and still failing was definitely the part of the quest which was not expected, and it I think it worked. I don't know if I haven't seen a lot of discussion around it, so I don't think
was
that,
this before or after did this continue before or after we got back to the fort?
This was before. This was in front of the dragon statue. Okay. Just after the waves,
okay,
where she's
it.
Like, I was supposed to stop them. I was supposed to, it's my fault we got to this point, yada, yada, yada. And that's kind of where the story gets left at this point. Like, we didn't really get past her, except she kind of did like the stages of grief, denial, whatever, to acceptance. Like, this is why I've been acting this way. And I think it was shortly told, but I think it was told effectively throughout, to the point where I was like, I'm pretty happy with that as a resolution for this tiny chapter, because obviously I've seen a lot of chatter where like, this is another cliffhanger, like what's going on, where this is nothing's progressing, which we've talked about, but this was the part that went full circle and I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I just pulled the dialogue. This was my chance to find redemption, to make amends. It was my nepotistic recommendation of Bianca that put the king's life in jeopardy, that threatened the future of the duchy. I was the one responsible for bringing her into the fold, and she betrayed us, betrayed me. The worst part of it is, despite everything she did, I cannot help but mourn her. She was not merely my sister, she was my closest friend, my confidant. She would always be there for me, or so I thought. She played me like a fiddle, used my generosity for her own ends, and yet she claimed to care for me until the very end.
It's definitely a bit more character, and I think that we've gotten a lot of quests over the past, I would say even decade, where a lot of characters' motivations came down to, they're an alien, you don't really understand why they do what they do.
Right.
Yeah.
This was a much more...
more human.
...pointed. This reminded me a lot of like Zanuck in the Goblin Quest series. Closer
and,
to that.
And this goes back to something that people like Mod Jack and Mod Shrike have talked about, in that and I'm talking, and I think this was posted. I think this was posted in Clan Quest, and it was sent to me. It was Montrike's talk a while back, and one of the things that came up in that was that you cannot, in effect, have a level of equivalence between the player and these alien-like beings that you were mentioning. And with that, how do you do stories on that? And that's why everything right. had to come down to this level, and that's why we're finally seeing that again. I think you Zerdones and Avernick probably watched that talk, right?
Yeah,
have not.
Okay, okay.
I have.
Okay, you should. I just figured wanted. Zerdones, you would have. But
yeah, it's I'm behind on a lot of things, but yeah.
Okay. And maybe this is the part of the quest that makes it just takes it to that next level, despite it being, like I said, my only complaint about the quest when I was doing it was like, oh, we're back in the fort. Talk to this person. I was legitimately shocked to see the quest complete dialogue pop up.
That's I don't think that's uncommon. I think people say the same thing about Dead and Buried. Just like, oh, we're not going yeah. to Rungale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this one's like, yeah.
That was kind of my thing. Like, I wasn't surprised to see the quest complete on this one. I was surprised to see it on Dead and Buried. One of the things I was saying about Dead and Buried was that it felt like that quest ended about 5 minutes too early.
Yeah.
And I feel like Ancient Awakening is the 5 minutes I was hoping for.
It's stretched out over more than 5 minutes, though.
Well, yeah, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But
it's that 5 minutes yeah. of plot.
Yeah, it's if Dead and Buried had... If Dead and Buried and Ancient Awakening had been a single piece of content, I would have been happy as a clam.
Yeah, that is definitely... And we're seeing... And that's where we go back to those old, bigger quests that would take, you know, 2 hours plus to do, whereas in this case... It's easier to sell, to develop the quests if you break them apart, mm-hmm. use them to sell content, use content to sell the quests.
It's 2 months of content versus one.
Yeah. Well, and
content drought is one of those big complaints.
Yeah. People don't like hearing it that way, but that's the way it'd be. So.
Yeah.
To me, it felt like one, you know, an old-timey TV show. Let me. I used the example of like the old timey Batman.
We're getting there, and that's the same thing. We hop on that dragon and ride it all the way out to Fort 4 and 3, and ask: are the players invested in this threat at this point? Zemmerigal's threat. Is there enough in this TV series of Fort 4 and 3 to make players care about this and care about it? Because you know where we've come from. With the Elder God Wars and the Stone of Jazz and all that Sixth Age business, is there enough to make players care? At least the players who are playing this quest and talking about it.
Well, I think if you like the last quest, then you're kind of in it, right? Like this was more, it was better. But if you didn't care for that, then this, you know, I think Zardones put it best. He's like, this one wasn't going to change your mind.
Yeah.
And. Yeah, it didn't change my mind.
I think there's enough to get players invested in the fort. So I think imperiling the fort is a good storytelling decision. As opposed to something like Varrock, where like, yeah, if Varrock gets burned, that's not good.
It's happened before.
Yeah,
things happen.
But I think like more to the point, the fort is ours. We made it. Mm-hmm. It's like Animal Crossing. Like if you leave your Animal Crossing town and it goes to shit, then like that hurts because you made that. Mm-hmm. You are responsible for this. It's yours.
It's weird seeing pictures or streams of people that are like just like starting the fort. It's like, oh damn, there was a lot that wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's come a long way.
It's keeps building.
Where I think it doesn't quite work is I don't, for me at least, I don't feel the peril. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel the investment in the fort. If the fort were imperiled, I would be invested in saving it. But I don't feel imperiled.
Do you feel that if the next thing starts with, like, cutscene, Vorkath flying over and just fire over the whole thing, does that solve it? Or is that...
I don't know. Maybe. And it might be because I'm familiar enough with the story that I know that Zemo is a moron and he's not very threatening as a person.
Very cartoon villain, yeah.
Yeah, he's Skeletor. He's, I'll get you, He-Man. Yeah.
That's fair.
I don't know.
That's definitely a good point. Like, that he's not been used threateningly in the past decade, at least.
Not since Defender of Varrock, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's an entirely different RuneScape when you put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing about the fort, like, I you know, it's cool that you do have a connection to the fort, right? So you do feel a little, like, ownership with that. But the thing that I felt is really weird, I don't, like, although the last two rewards additions to the fort are cool, they don't feel connected to the quest at all.
I want to talk about that when we get to rewards, yeah, specifically the granny stuff.
That too. We can for sure talk about that.
Yeah, we're not quite there yet, but I think we can kind of loop that in with the idea that this is a bunch of TV episodes tying the storyline together. The quest is a series of TV episodes in that Dead and Buried provided the Raptor storyline. But it was also like that last 15 minutes of a 24 season that introduces the next one, and this one finishes that off.
And that's what bugged me, is Dead and Buried was told a story and a half. It told the Raptor Elemaria story, and it told the first half of the Ungale story, and it ended in the middle of that story.
That's interesting to say, because I also feel like Unwelcome Guests and the first half of Dead and Buried was the Elemaria story. Like, it feels like they're getting segmented up weird a little bit in that way.
Yeah. Why does it feel that way? Is it that this thing was written before? Like, the general arc was written before? Like, the macro arc? That the macro arc was written before, and it's just kind of split at weird parts?
I mean, I like match it up with content? Like, Unwelcome Guest was to match it up with Slayer.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's also, like, this is going to sound really bad when I say it. So if the J-Mods responsible for this quest are listening, I mean this with all the love in the world. It feels like cheap drama to just end on a cliffhanger.
Soap opera.
Like, it's like Tanis made the old Batman comparison, where like the Adam West Batman show would always air two part episodes. So there'd be a half hour episode, the next week would be the other half of the episode, and the first half would always end with Batman in an inescapable death trap, and you got to tune in next week to see how he gets out of it.
Mm-hmm. Or like the Pokemon case of always of having Team Rocket always trying to catch the Pikachu, right?
Right, exactly. It's, oh, how are they going to get out of this one?
Makes sense.
And I honestly think this is just the path they chose to go with this, because it's been very clear in that last live stream we got from Mod Jack that the point of this is to start thinking of RuneScape in the sense of seasons.
Yeah, like, this is to sell Vorka. Like, that's the reason we don't get the boss battle at the end, is like they put in another team, an entire update into that, and this is to lead up to that.
Right. In that back in a different time, you would have had pretty much everything from after Murder on the Border until now in one quest.
Sure. And I think
story wise,
they might be short, but I think there's something to be said about, like,
it makes it more accessible
projects instead of one
for people.
Like three different teams got to have their voice on this and put bespoke mechanics into it and learn between quests and stuff like that. There's something to be said about that. And also, like, they're building quests into bosses. I think 10 years ago, it'd be insane if we had, like, quests and bosses, like, connect. Mm-hmm. Virago was the loosest connection. They had, like, stuff like Araxor and Mazcav's off doing its own thing in some corner of the universe. And I think there's something to be said about all the chapters of the story aren't just quests.
Yeah, and you know, the season thing is cool, and the overarching fort thing is cool. I think what feels weird is just those points where they broke up the story, because like Zardones was saying, Dead and Buried was a story and a half. Well, it should have just been a story, tacked the last 15 minutes onto this one and tell the story of Ungale. Right? Like,
yeah,
it feels just a little two times off in the crypt.
Set. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Like, I think if Dead and Buried had ended with the dream of Zemo, and then we hadn't gone into the crypt to find, like, we'd done that part at the start of Ancient Awakenings, I feel like that would have been paced a little better. Maybe that would have made Dead and Buried too short. I don't know.
Being attached to unwelcome guests. I don't know.
Yeah, then we just keep shifting the problem backwards.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also remember, I think Mod Jack said somewhere that it was him specifically who asked for the Raptor reveal and storyline in the last quest.
Right, because they wanted to use the Queen more in this Mythalan story.
And he said there's following through on that and seeing it, there's some question if that was the right decision. And, you know, if you go back and you answer that question now and you take the alternate path here, I think you have a much more linear and approach that makes more sense than we see with this.
I'm curious how this plays, like, just one after the other, like us not waiting a month in between each one. I think it might play.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know Thaxi was saying Thaxi. That he wanted to go back at some point and just play the entire arc back to back and see how it goes. So
I think that's an interesting comparison in the context of, like, comparing the season of storyline to a television season. Because, yeah, TV, modern TV has this really weird pacing issue. Like if you go back and watch TV from the 90s, the way we watch TV now, it's
I
so
want that
weird.
Back.
Well, there's advantages to it, but, like, modern television, in the era of streaming, we've become accustomed to, we'll watch an entire season in one sitting. And the pacing
has
sort of evolved.
Not Star Trek. No, that's still week to week.
Star Trek is still week to week, but, like, Netflix originals, Amazon Prime originals.
Like, I think a lot of them have moved to the week to week release schedule, but they're still being written like they were to be watched.
One long thing.
Well, because they have to be written. They have to be written with the understanding that in a year, someone is going to sit down and just watch them back to back. In the 90s, you couldn't do that.
Right.
Like, you couldn't do that with you couldn't watch the X-Files that way. It wasn't possible. Unless you bought the VHS.
Mm-hmm. So does this mean
we have a similar issue.
So does this mean that these quests are best looked at as a package deal then after we get to the end?
Maybe.
When specifically Mod Trike went back and repackaged the Elder God Wars quest, I think that might have been, like, the mindset is, like, oh, we released these months at a time, and now I'm going to go back and, like, clean up the requirements, make it all tighter and stuff like that. And, like, that might be the mindset going on right now, is that there's definitely a thought process between, there's a difference between how they're going to be played month to month versus in the future. And maybe that's something they should account for, like, at the end of a season or a storyline, and
build that into the production schedule.
Maybe make them play better month to month when they release, but then later on have a project that says, okay, we're going to clean all these things up that make them better to play together.
Right.
And that's just adding more complexity to the entire thing.
It does.
And you're adding more work.
Yeah.
It's a hard brief because everything in RuneScape does have to be designed that way, where it has to simultaneously be appealing to people like us who are playing updates week to week and we're, like, watching for the next update. But it also has to be enjoyable. It also has to be playable to someone who is coming at it a week, a month, 6 months, a year, 10 years later.
Yeah.
I think some stuff's been lost of time because people didn't think about, 5 months, 5 years, 10 years later. It's like, oh, this Dungeoneer Warshop, it rewards level 80 weapons. That'll be perfect. No one cares anymore.
Yeah. I mean, some of that is inevitable because of content creep. But, like, from a story perspective, like, this story has to be engaging when you're watching it on a week-to-week basis or if you're binging it. And that's it's hard to pace that. Mm-hmm. So it works both ways.
And I think the thing that we're running up against here looking at ancient awakening, dead and buried, and looking at this, we're seeing RuneScape's new way of delivering stories, because obviously, from what we hear, the Elder God War stuff and the Sixth Age stuff, that was just too taxing for the people involved. There was too much work. There was too many story lines and threads to keep consistent and straight and all that. Whereas with this is an entirely new, different way of telling story in the game through a vehicle that is a quest, as we know it, or as it says on the screen, but it's entirely different in terms of anything we've been presented before. And I think that's what the disconnect is that I'm feeling, in addition to the fact that this is just too short. I'm still just adapting to this new style of questing.
Mm-hmm. There's something I think that's
what I sum up as my concerns with the quest.
Yeah, the story's definitely more simple, and it's also like an aesthetic feel, like to leave up room for updates like the Grove. Right, like that's another way that like it's making room for other updates. It's kind of it's open. It's not as like complex and weaving threads and trying to remember everything like Elder God Wars was. It's fairly open and like they're
simple.
There's some
this
room
one at
to
least
move around.
Yeah,
yeah. So that's another way that like it's in favor of content.
And you said it best, Avernick. It goes both ways. I think it was me who said that the quests serve content, but you said the flip side, that content can serve quests.
Yeah, we have bosses that care about what the quests are going on right now, and they're going to tie in, and they're going to be probably a mini quest around it, and it's going to be a chapter of a story.
Yeah.
And I think other things like Het's Oasis maybe is an example, where it's like a skilling update. It's like that was probably a very tenuous tie to Elder God Wars, but they made it work. Like we have to do a content update. Well, we don't want the story to like pause for so long, so we'll put some things in.
Yeah,
there
that mini quest, that part two mini quest was something there. So
I think it's going both ways, and I think depending on what side of it you're on, you're saying, oh, the other side is maybe not taking away, but like it's
right. And the reality is we're just adapting people to the new style.
Right, I think they're trying to unify, like, oh, everyone cares about this story, these updates, these things. Where like, there's a lot of people like, I only come in for the bosses, I only come in for the quests, I only come in for the skilling updates.
But we want you to be here for the entire season.
Yeah, yeah.
The entire season. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the rewards then. One quest point, 15,000 necromancy XP, 10,000 XP in a skill above 50, access to the Ungale combat activity in standard and hard mode, we already talked about that one.
Yep.
And the botanist's workbench.
Yeah. This
Tannis,
is the one.
Go, because you said something earlier about this.
Hey, I mean, I think it's a great reward, just like
I've always wanted something like the tier 3 for my herb lore stuff. Granted, it doesn't take advantage of your perks, but it just takes the load away from making overloads. You say, here's all the ingredients, give me the unfinished ones, use them on the bench, boop, 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 done.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and if you want the ultimate efficiency, make them by hand.
Right. I mean, very similar to the archery, the fletching update that we have.
Yeah.
But the same problem with both of these, they don't connect to the story at all. Like I don't understand it at all. I'll even give the fletching one the benefit of the doubt and say we had to make arrows for our fort. But
I like the fletching one because like our guards have crossbows now. Like they
I mean,
change out what they're holding.
Something, right?
Yeah, like, it was a little tenuous, but they made an effort.
Right. The herbler one is nothing. And I think the part that hurts the most is it was basically they need one line where Bill says, I'll make you a bench. Because it's basically Granny Roman says it after the quest is like, oh yeah, I'll help you prep for the fight coming up. But the fact it wasn't in the quest.
She didn't even have any lines in the quest.
No, she doesn't appear at all.
Afterwards. And there's like a little interaction you have to do where you go talk to your guard captain and make sure it's okay she's here. And then come back before you can use some of the stuff.
And I gotta lie, I had to look up the map to see where exactly the botanist workbench was going to be before building it.
Yeah, I did too.
I only I you know, figured because of the pre-blog, yeah.
Okay. I would have liked to seen this. Well, I guess we don't really need it anymore. We don't really need it anymore, but I still would have liked to seen it under
patch. What do you mean, seen it?
An herb patch. That's a farming building. We still have
room. We have eight.
Yeah, there's room. There's
we
room.
Have eight herb patches in game. That's more than enough. With using all the MDX tools of the trade, I can pull upwards of.
But yeah, this could have
2,500 herbs a day.
It's not enough.
The bench could have used a line like Rodney could have yelled out, and we can make potions too.
It did feel very tacked on.
I think that stood out. Thing that might fix it for me is if the next Vorkath mini quest, whatever, requires you build the bench to tier one and talk to Granny Rowan, because she does explain it a little.
Yeah, like
that,
I think
that we'll get that story into the line.
I do suspect that's the case because they've dropped way too many hints about that character.
I like she's like a folktale character from the wilderness. It's very it's a very cool introduction.
Yeah, I think I made this comment in a chat with someone where she's like a regional demigod, sort of. It's just kind of this weird.
There's myths told about her, and she pops up, and Sophia's granddad told her about her. It's like all that stuff.
Just this weird, right,
and every fantasy story has someone like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's cool. Any theories about the cat?
Oh, yeah, the cat. Yeah.
If you talk to the cat with the cat speak amulet, it still says meow, and you're like, that should have worked.
Yeah, why doesn't that work?
So it's obviously not a cat.
It's like a demon or something, maybe. I don't know.
Either it's not a cat, or it's a cat that's screwing with us.
Or it's Trindine.
Yeah, I'm on that one. It's Trindine.
It's just yelling meow.
No, it's Wahisatel.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Everything is Wahisatel.
Everything's a Majorat.
Yeah. If in doubt, Majorat.
Yeah, that's how it goes in RS, I think. But I mean, I saw some things that people didn't like. They felt like the shop here and the tools that Granny provides aren't useful. But am I the only one who's wanted something like this for overload banking?
The tier 3 one is the absolutely by far best one. Like, I'm trying to even remember the tier 1 one does.
The tier 1 is decanting.
Yeah, I think people are like, oh, I already have that. But now it's in the fort.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's centralizing.
It's building up the skilling hub, sort of, but it's like nothing new.
And tier 2 is the herb lore supplies, like the basic ones, some red berries, some white berries.
I think red berry pies really easily now.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So... and nothing crazy, vials of water over which you used to be able to get from the portable well. So,
And the portables, if you have one in this room and then use the workbench, I think you get all the benefits.
Yeah. So
they are really trying to get people out of the smithy.
The smithy specifically. I was going to say lumberage. They've done that. But the
Well, yeah, I mean, like you can see the design philosophy throughout the fort is they're trying to have people go to the specific rooms for all the skilling.
For each stone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which was very much not the case when the fort first came out. It's just everyone congregated in the smithy.
Oh, the best bank, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is really kind of all we had, though, in the beginning, right?
Yeah, like, yeah kind of. Yeah.
I mean, well, that was where the skilling took place. You could still... The other buildings had all of the... Other
amenities, yeah, but now we have the fletching and the cooking and the herb lore. Yeah, it's definitely artisan skill heavy production and importables type things.
Yeah, not to throw another advertisement in here, but we did talk about skill guilds on that last monthly bit and how you have some unofficial guilds. Let's just say, like War's Retreat, and we actually raised the question. Is Fort 4 and 3 an unofficial, like, mega skilling guild? So, that's mega, another reason.
Yeah, basically.
Go back to that.
It's the unmaxed max guild.
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
It's definitely a design intent is that it's a very popular hub.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and it's working for that, but if it keeps going this way, if the next quest is the finale, we're going to get a restockable pond that we can fish in or something, right? Like that's
what artisan skills have we not touched?
But it's fine, actually. I wouldn't
fire
mind
making.
Crafting
fishing.
crafting fire making
yeah
construction's everywhere.
So fire making, we burn the fort down.
That's the boss fight. we help forecast.
there was also, anyway, so it seems like we're all happy with the reward here, and it kind of hits the spot.
Yeah.
There was one other reward that we got from this in addition to everything else that was listed, but before that reward, ratings out of 5, Tanis?
I would give this one, I want to give it a 4, but it is short, but
that's okay.
I'd probably go 4.
That's okay.
Probably go 4.
Zerdones?
If you'd asked me this an hour and a half ago, I probably would have said 2. I think you guys have talked me up to a 3.
Okay. Wow.
Yes.
Avernick?
I think 4. I feel confident with 4.
I'm going to go with 4 as well. And the reason I always say this, for something to do 5, it needs to introduce some form of seismic shift, in addition to, you know, coming out unencumbered, having interesting mechanics, environment, music, and all that other fun stuff with it, and telling a compelling storyline. And this one definitely did tell the compelling storyline with it, and I think that actually came from the B line for it. So well done, Ancient Awakening, on that. So, I mean, unless it did something absolutely to knock my socks off, it would have been a 5 in that case. So I'm just going to go with 4. So I think we did
solid
overall pretty well on that. But I did mention there was another reward for this quest, you guys. And I got to just dangle this in front of everybody's face right now. You get 9,500 hero points for completing everything with this content drop.
Nearly 10 levels of the hero pass. Wow. We could have wanted more.
And we had
almost
20,
like it was designed with
we
this
had,
in mind.
We had 20,000 before this, so now we're up to 29.5K with all
it's
the specials.
Done.
And we're not done yet. I'm sorry.
Plus another 10,000 if you got the Yak Track progress boost from the last Yak Track.
True. Yeah. I think that there's something to be said about shooting yourself in the foot, and they kept it vague as to how many points would come from special missions. And if they just set out the gate, we're going to give you 40,000 points in special missions, I think that math argument goes out the window for people, the detractors. But other games have done this too, where they're like, oh yeah, we'll give you more with this system. And sometimes it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But this time,
Well, they knew ahead of time.
I want a time machine, and I want to go. I want a time machine. I want to go print this piece of dialogue out that I have up on the screen right now and mail it out to everybody who was a detractor.
I mean, I want a time machine too, but for completely different reasons.
Right. I mean, you know, never mind like, killing dictators before they can wreak havoc on the world.
I'm going back and buying Apple shares.
I'm buying GameStop shares.
Diamond hands, baby.
Anyways, that kind of pivots to where we're going next with this, in that we have also Mod Keeper's version 4 of player feedback update that came out last Friday. We record the show Thursday evening, so we miss whatever comes out on Friday. Show gets released Friday late afternoon North American time, early morning Saturday UK, and that's why we miss these posts here. But to sum it up, Jagex will not be releasing another Hero Pass after Underworld ends on December 3rd. They have done this to recognize questions it raised that do not reflect the direction of the game, and if a new reward system is to be pursued, it will be built with players and not involve content buffs with membership or paid disparity. And more opportunities to add your voice to future content are coming with combat rebalancing in 2023 and throughout 2024.
It barely got a chance to live.
Pour one out.
That thing didn't have a chance to live.
It was dead before it came out.
That didn't even.
I mean, people could say you could do another one, but just remember how toxic Rune Pass was, the first incarnation of the track. They had to kill that off, right? They had to kill off Yelps.
Yeah.
Literally.
I don't even think
literally the same thing with a cute yak on it, but what
the first yak track didn't even go that well. Like, that took iterations until people were happy with it.
Yeah, remember the first one.
Count Yakula was pretty blah.
Yeah, but pretty dire. I want to know what they're going to do, because they can't not do this kind of like long-term reward type content. So are they going to do another yak track?
The point of passes is to bring people into the game for that period of time.
And to reward people for playing, incentivize play.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they try sooner than we think to like community consult, surveys, whatever. I just don't think they're going to get good responses.
Right. And from the language on this is that the survey was loud and clear. And from this, sounds like the community consultations talked about probably aren't even happening in relation to Hero Pass until they go forward.
Not for this iteration. Yeah. So, it'd be like in 6 months they try to start throwing more things out there. It's like, would you guys be okay with just an extra XP counter? I don't know.
Go ahead, Tanner.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's just, I don't know, it's the monetization scheme in general. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
They need to
consolidate,
go back to the drawing board, figure out what is the strategy, decide what the strategy is, and then go with it. And that's that. Like, it kind of, I mean,
right, because sure, this is beating a dead horse, but what game has a subscription fee, a loot box / treasure hunter style mechanic, something like rune coins, and a battle pass on top of it?
Paid battle pass. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah, exactly. So, but hey, what Hero Pass? Never happened.
Yeah, let's just forget that this ever happened and derailed our necromancy coverage.
It didn't happen.
There's definitely been some small like little things thrown out there to like appease the community. Like, oh yeah, we're going to do the comet beta sooner. And oh, what graphical area do you want graphically updated? Is like kind of like they're trying to hit like some high notes.
Yeah. And this is the last thing on Hero Pass. They say the three things that stood out across various player types from the survey and the community was that the Hero Pass rewards raised questions about the game's future approach to paid benefits, especially the extra buff charges for Premier members. The new reward system has a prominent presence in day-to-day since it has paid features that makes a player feel like it can't be ignored if they want to, and it doesn't feel RuneScape-y. It breaks the immersion of the game.
I mean, it's always like something like that is always going to be somewhat immersion breaking.
It's an interface, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the Yak Tracks, to their credit, did try to sort of occupy real in-game space.
I think that added a lot of overhead.
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately kind of pointless because you go there once and that's it.
A lot of the, I think a lot of the graphics in Hero Pass were like the icons for the rewards. It seemed like they were trying to like simplify it. Like they don't have to make bespoke drawings for every reward and everything. They were trying to like streamline it so they could pump these things out a little better. And Yak Track was definitely a lot of bespoke stuff that's definitely a friction.
Well, that was one of the things that I was kind of concerned about with Hero Pass, because like Hero Pass, they committed to like 200 cosmetics.
That was a lot
time.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like they had so many cosmetics with this, and like, are they going to keep that momentum going? I mean, now
that's what Zant
not,
said. But you ask a character artist, are you able to keep this going?
Well, I think a lot of the Hero Pass stuff was actually outsourced. They just needed like,
I mean,
two
that's
people to like check it as it came in.
Yeah, like if you're outsourcing, that's a little bit of a different equation. You're basically just limited by your money at that point.
Right, and if it's successful, you throw it out, and then you have some quality control in-house.
Well, all right.
We'll never know.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
Final thoughts, Tanis, on Hero Pass? I know this has been very taxing for us.
I'm just glad there's a resolution and we can move on. I've never wanted to move on more about anything ever.
That's you feel closure.
That's a good positive outlook.
Yeah. Zerdone, Avernick, anything?
I got level 99 in the Hero Pass while we were streaming this.
Grats.
But I don't know. It doesn't feel like it means anything anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm glad I did not put money into it, or else it would have felt ripped off. And that's my final thoughts.
That is a good point. So.
All right. Let's do some achievements then. Wrap up the show in style. We've got MejQuest with 99 Constitution on October 11th. Warrock with 120 Fletching. And Brappa with 99 Necromancy on the 7th.
Yeah, Feel My Pokes with 99 Necromancy on the 7th. And as well as Mr. Crafty with 99 Necromancy on the 7th.
And joining the family on October 7th with 99 Necromancy is also Mrs. Crafty. Oh, nice. And Tadio 22 with 99 Mining. And October 6th, SillyCat 98, 99 Necromancy.
All right. Then we have Xena ATN with 99 Strength on the 6th. And Charbura. Burra, yeah, 2, with 120 Dungeoneering on the 5th. All right.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. All right, Zerdones, this pick of the week had me just losing it in pre-show.
Yeah, so it's
a 2.5-hour documentary.
Yep, another one of my 2.5-hour YouTube documentaries that I like so much. So this one is about... pretend for the benefit of the tape that I didn't ask you guys this question in pre-show, but do you guys remember the GameStop thing from 2021?
That's what I wish I used my time machine for.
Right. So for listeners who may or may not remember, in January of 2021, GameStop, which is an American video game brick and mortar, like physical retailer, they sell physical video games. They've been struggling for a long time for the obvious reasons that who buys physical video games anymore. They're a publicly traded company. Their stock price had been declining, and a couple of hedge funds had opened up short positions on GameStop, which I'm not going to go into what that means. Essentially, it means they're betting that the stock price is going down. If the stock price continued going down, they would make a lot of money. If the stock price went up, they would lose ludicrous quantities of money. Reddit found out about this, and they started buying GameStop shares to drive the price up, to deliberately screw over these hedge funds. Price rose to astronomical levels. It rose to like 400. It peaked at almost $400 a share, which is ridiculous. It's an absurd multiple of its actual value. The fallout from this is kind of interesting. There were a lot of conversations in the SEC, like a lot of regulators got very interested in this. This video is not about that. This video is about what happened to the Reddit community after that. Because one of the realities of the GameStop problem was that when the dust settled, like the thing about the stock market is a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
Everyone who makes money in the stock market means that someone else lost money. And the reality is that most of the people who lost money were Redditors who came in on the tail end of the movement, bought in at a very high price when everything was deflating, and then the price dropped, and now they're just holding shares that are worth a fraction of what they paid for.
And on that, I have a fun graph up right now on the video of this that shows just how absurd its peak and drop was.
It's still quite absurd. Like, it's still quite high relative to its historical values.
Closed at 1509 today.
Yeah, that's quite elevated especially for this company. Like, if you think about what their business model is, like, they are...
in mid 2020 it was
fundamentally doomed.
In mid 2020 it was trading for $1.07 a share.
Yeah.
Right.
15 times, yeah.
Right.
So this video, which is titled "This is Financial Advice," is all about what happened on these Reddit communities after January 2021. And that story gets weird because basically what you have is you have a community full of people who are not very literate on capital markets, which is not like that's not a knock against them. Capital markets are complicated things. They're deliberately made hard to understand because Wall Street is made up of jackasses and idiots. But they don't have a lot of financial literacy, and they are stuck with these basically worthless investments. Their response has been to descend into absolutely wild conspiracy theories. Basically, they've turned into a financial apocalypse cult where their stated goal is to force the implosion of the global financial system via buying shares in GameStop, AMC Theaters, which is a theater chain in the United States, like a you go to see the movies theater chain, and Bed Bath & Beyond, which is a brick and mortar retailer that sells home goods and also went bankrupt. Like they went bankrupt like last year. They just finished liquidating.
Their share is worth 7.9 cents right now.
Even that I think is overvalued because Bed Bath & Beyond functionally does not exist as a company. There is nothing. They are nothing. But these communities have sprung up around these meme stocks, and they believe that if they buy all of these shares and do a whole bunch of other weird rituals and hold them forever without selling, eventually, somehow, they will be in a position where a whole bunch of shadowy short sellers who have short positions in all these companies will have to close their positions, which they have to do by buying shares from existing holders, which will somehow all be held by these, they call themselves apes for reasons that are very silly. And the apes will be able to charge phone number prices for these shares. Like, they bandy about numbers like $100 million a share, which is cartoonish amounts of money.
Infinite money glitch.
Yeah, exactly. It's an infinite money glitch for reality, which means it obviously isn't true. But the fervor with which they believe it and the loyalty rituals and the – it's so weird.
What was the example you were giving us that sent me up the wall?
Oh, I can't even remember now. Okay. So broadly speaking, the belief system is very modular, so it's hard to pin down a specific form of what they believe. But broadly speaking, they believe that Wall Street is committing grand-scale financial fraud by using shares that don't actually exist to open short positions on all these companies to drive them out of business. Because if they have a short position in these companies and they go out of business, they don't have to pay, the hedge funds don't have to pay tax on their profits, which is false, but that's what they believe. They believe this. They believe that if they can somehow get a hold of all of the actual shares, which they believe they've already done, although like reality keeps proving them wrong, that they will be able to dictate price because price is just supply and demand. They control the supply.
That's not how stock works.
It's not for so many reasons, not the least of which that hit yourself in the head a couple of times and pretend all of this makes sense to you. Imagine all of this happens. Like, you get to a point where the global economy is going to collapse unless these Redditors sell their stock for 9 figures per share. The government is going to do something, right? Like that, they're not just going to
surrender.
Yeah, they're not just going to be like, yeah, have the GDP of Belgium each. Like, no. No, it's not.
That's not how businesses work. That's not how stocks work. That's not how.
And what's really funny is because, like, these communities have been going on. Like, GameStop happened in January 2021. Time of recording, this is October 2023. So we're approaching 3 years that this conspiracy theory has been developing. Reality keeps proving them wrong. So do they adjust to reality? I mean, some of them do, I'm sure. But en masse, they just delve deeper and deeper into conspiracy.
It's a cost.
Right. And they keep trying to find increasingly convoluted means by which, this is still on the table. This is still totally going to happen. And they seem to be doing that by latching on to, like, public filings and certain investors who put themselves in the public eye and decoding, like, hidden messages in the filings like the earnings calls.
I thought there was a lot of overlap with another Reddit community out there.
Yeah, it's QAnon, but capital markets.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a different one, a closer one to us.
I'm beginning to think maybe all Reddit.
Yeah, they're all related. I'm sure.
Yeah, but no, I would no
high overlap. I'm sure.
Right. Yeah,
I'm not doing a very good job of summarizing the actual content of this video because it is deeply strange. It's also there's a lot of it delves not deeply, but it does delve into some specifics about how capital markets work.
Yeah.
Because kind of like it has to explain what a short position is in technical detail. So it's a video that's very hard to summarize, but I highly recommend watching it because it is very funny.
He makes a lot of good videos. For sure. Full Ideas, Dan Olson, yeah.
If you're a regular viewer or regular listener, I've recommended several of this guy's videos before. He is the same guy who did, I think, the last time I had a pick of the week, I did Why It's Rude to Suck at Warcraft. Same guy. I recommended a video about NFTs. Same guy. He's very good at analyzing these absolutely bonkers conspiracy communities.
Yeah, mostly in the tech field.
Yeah.
It sounds like we need him for something that we just finished talking about not too long ago, hey?
I would be very interested to hear if he has an opinion on that.
On the elephant in the room, hey?
The what shall not be named. Yes. Yeah.
I got missing time. I don't know what you're talking about. I feel like there's something that never happened.
Past 2 months. Blur.
Yeah, just a big blur where that should be. Yeah.
What have you been up to on RS, Tannis?
Still woodcutting, slowly trying to tick that 120 off.
Okay.
It's
better now with the Grove stuff.
You know, I like going back to the... Sometimes it's going to go back to gathering. This quest was cool, though. I mean, like I said, like, I do like... That's the kind of combat I like to do. Like, that wave type stuff. That's cool to me, so... But, I've been skilling. It's my jam.
All right, Zerdones.
To be honest with you, not a lot. I mean, I kind of got burnt out on necromancy, so I kind of took a step back for a bit. Last couple of days, I've really just been doing dailies and sort of chipping away at the botanist's workbench. Mostly, I've been playing Witcher 3, to be honest with you. Just a very good game. I also recommend that.
Freaking game.
Very good game.
God. And still holds up, right?
It really does.
What, like 8 years old at this point?
Yeah.
It's
some of the better facial animations I've ever seen, which is astonishing for 2015.
And oh, what's the blonde's name? Yeah.
There's several.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you several know this blondes. One. This one has some really cool scenes. I believe they're in a tub or something.
We'll have to talk about this in post show because I don't know what blonde you're talking about.
But or tub. No.
I know what tub he's talking about.
Oh, okay. All right. It's the tub, obviously.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on, Avernick.
Mostly just passive fire making. I have level 119, so just chipping all the way up. But I'm trying to go slow because I don't have Bernie yet, the skilling pet. So I'm like, once I hit 120, I'm really not going to want to.
He's one of the hardest to get.
Yeah.
I'm not doing myself any favors, but. Because that one's based off of like XP drops, isn't it? And I've not been.
No, Bernie is time based.
Time based? Oh, perfect. I've been doing very slow fire making, so that's fine.
Yes, that's your aces.
I'm just unlucky.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good. For me, I finished up with the Thok event, and through a combination of that event, lots of spooning, and some asset liquidation, I managed to acquire my full tier 95 set of necromancy armor and weapons through that entire event.
Wow.
And that marks the first time that I have best in slot gear for a combat style. So that's precisely what they designed to happen with necromancy, so that fits the bill.
The accessible combat style. That,
yeah, exactly.
Until next month.
And no, and I mean it's actually been an interesting path progression because you start off just training necromancy like you train any other combat style, right? Then after that you go and you do the quest involving Hermod. Then you go do Hermod outside of the quest, obviously, for the power armor. Mm-hmm. You encounter Raziel in the level 95 quest. Kill him there, and then you kill Raziel and you hone that mechanic fight down after that, and you become, in effect, fully versed with the combat rotations of necromancy, allowing you to tailor that to whatever fight that you want. So it's actually been a really interesting path that they built with that, and I'm actually quite fond of how it's all turned out.
It's a very clear progression path.
Yeah, and I mean, I see that definitely because I never class myself as a high tier PVM. I always put myself, you know, right in the middle, and it feels like even for me, it helped me a ton. So
nice,
yeah. And also just to stoke the fires of RNG, I got the Raziel pet at 392 kill count. And I only have two items left for the log, and I'm just north of like 450 KC.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah. I go and drive for 2,000.
Illegal.
Yeah, his luck is...
Content creator luck is real.
Yeah, I got...
I think he's got a potato in that inventory somewhere.
like no serious. Like two of the clusters of drops I got were within, you know, 5 kills of each other, so... I would get one and then go 5 kills, get the next one, and then next day did the exact same thing again. So
I can't decide whether to tell you to buy a lottery ticket or never buy a lottery ticket ever.
You're done. You're out.
Either you are walking luck or you've used up all of your luck. all of your luck is only in RuneScape.
I'm happy to have my luck in video games, if I'm being honest. In any case, that brings us to the end of this episode of Update. Remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Cast, Spotify, and more. Just visit update.show/subscribe. And of course, we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. That's where we post the video versions of the show and more. We do the nibbles, but we've also been trying some shorts out. So let us know what you think of those. Of course, but I think that brings us to the end of our program this week. Always fun to do Quest Week. Great having you guys back, Zerdones and Avernick.
Yep, happy to be here.
And of course, Tanis and I will be back next week to discuss Halloween, amongst other things. So until then, take care, everyone. See you then.
Bye.
See ya.